What's up, Tony?
Hold on, we'll stop. We can just cut this out. Q&A episode, yeah?
Dude, let's keep this in. We don't need to cut this out. They can hear, just make sure we're planning it right. Yeah, we got a Q&A episode. Let's do it. Do you have any cues for me to A?
I don't have many cues for you to A.
I can find some cues in the
but I know you've got a nice, long, lovely Q&A list.
Yeah, we got plenty to go through. How you doing, man? Everything good?
Yeah, I got PT after this.
Not for the knee?
Yeah.
How's it feeling?
It's good. I mean, I'm moving around. I'm living my life, so that's great. The real revelation was that the PT figured out exactly what the problem is.
Okay, so what is it?
It's the posterior cruciate ligament.
Okay.
And it has stretched.
Okay. So it's not torn.
It is not torn. It
That's
is
good.
Too long. And so basically the muscles in the calf and in my quad essentially are super tight trying to keep it in place because the ligament, like without the ligament being fully tight there, my knee feels like it wants to
super
wobble
unstable.
Out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so counterintuitively, she did like basically first we did some assessments and I got into a squat and basically had to stop where I knew it was going to be very painful.
Mm-hmm.
And then she did some basically massaging the muscle, myofascial release.
Of your quad?
No, of like the calf and the hamstring, the other side.
Oh, got it. Okay.
My bad.
Okay.
And just like worked on that for a while and moved my knee around or whatever. And then I was like, all right, we're going to try it again. And I shit you not, I was able to do a full squat.
Yeah, I believe it.
Which for me was incredible because every other time when I got to that point, I would get this really sharp shooting pain, instability. So for me, it was just like extremely hope inducing.
Yeah.
And, you know, since then I've been like trying to work it out and do my PT and stuff and try to keep those muscles from getting too tight. But I will still, it depends on, I guess, like how tense I am or how my body's doing. Cause sometimes I feel like I can move through that range of motion pain free. And sometimes it's just like before.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, anyways, more than anything, I'm just excited to know like what it is exactly. And not just like, hey, we think it's sprained, you know?
Yeah.
And things that I can do to help the healing process. So I'm probably another 4 to 6 weeks out. Thanks.
Well, I mean, dude, that's really good to know. I mean, 4 to 6 weeks out isn't bad, especially for something like this. And the self-myofascial release, it sometimes can be a really, really wonderful tool, especially because there's so much we don't know about pain, right? There are people who you can look at their spine and they have no herniated discs, no disc herniations, no nothing, but they present with severe pain. And then other people, you can look at their spine and they have multiple disc herniations and they present with zero pain. Mm-hmm. And so there are a lot of people just think that pain is solely based on a physical problem, whether it's a torn ligament, an elongated ligament, a broken bone. Obviously that would be painful, but there's like a physical problem. And that's not necessarily the case. And the pain science is ever evolving and we're always learning, but so much about pain can be mental as well. Mm-hmm. And so I bet for you, like when you went down into that squat after she did the self-myofascial release and like there was no pain, I bet it was like almost freaked you out. You're like, holy shit. Like you were expecting pain, but when the pain didn't come, you almost like freaked out a little bit.
It felt a little bit like magic. And I know it's not, but to have that much of a difference after like 20 minutes of an intervention that didn't seem all that groundbreaking, you know, it's like they didn't give me like a pill or a shot or like put me in a big machine. It was literally just massaging the muscle.
What that will often do is it will calm down because your brain is getting signals basically saying this is going to cause pain. And so when you do self-myofascial release, when you do some type of massage techniques, it will calm those down. It will say, it's okay. Like, we're safe. we're in a safe range of motion. That, because if you think about it, like even something like muscle tightness, it's you could take someone who is like if you were like passed out, completely passed out and like unconscious, we could take your body through pretty insane ranges of motion, right? Like, whereas if you're fully conscious, all of a sudden, like you can't do a full split. Like you're restricted very severely. And that's often because your brain, it's not because you don't have the range of motion. It's because your brain is like, oh, this is dangerous. I haven't actually worked through this range of motion. I feel like I'm going to get hurt. So your brain will like not allow your muscles to work through that range of motion. So when you can do some of these techniques, it essentially calms the brain down. It will say, okay, it's okay. It's safe. I'm fine. There's no issue. And pain is often a signal from your brain saying, I shouldn't be doing this. So it's not even necessarily because there's something wrong. Sometimes it's because your brain is like, I don't want you to go further because I'm scared you're going to get hurt, type of a thing. Which if you do have an elongated PCL, then that could absolutely, your brain's a little bit nervous that, hey, I don't want to go further than this. But through that massage technique, it sounds like you're able to at least reduce that pain in the short term, which is amazing.
You know, and that makes perfect sense, because sometimes I feel like it helps a lot. And then sometimes like I'm in a rush, I'm trying to get my PT in or whatever while I'm doing other stuff during the day. I feel like that stress, it actually, when I start working on the muscles and trying to do the exercises and whatnot, I almost feel like it makes it worse. So there is like a stress element.
Oh, absolutely.
That ties into all of this. Like if it's not actually making me more relaxed, if it's making me more wound up, more tightly wound, then then my range of motion suffers for that.
100%. There's no question about it. Absolutely.
And the day I got injured, I was really tired. I like really was like, oh man, I like said I was going to go to this class. I have to do it, of course. But I was just like so beat. I felt like I was like dehydrated. That's when it happened. So I wonder if that's correlated as well.
I wouldn't be surprised at all. But I'm glad that you went. I'm glad that you're getting PT and that it's on the mend. That's amazing.
Yeah, thanks, man. Thanks. It's just not knowing, I think, is the worst part. You know, like how long is it going to take? Like they said it's a sprain, but they couldn't be specific. Like knowing exactly what's going on in and of itself makes a huge difference.
Yeah, that's exactly, because now you know, all right, I've got a road to recovery. I know what needs to be done. It's just a matter of time now.
Yeah.
Well, good, brother. I'm happy.
Thanks, man. What's new with you?
My daughter's birthday was on Sunday, which
happy
is just
birthday.
Crazy. Just crazy, man. She's one. She's so my wife and I, when you say mom and dad in Hebrew, it's Ima and Abba. Mm-hmm. So she's calling us Ima and Abba. And like she's saying it, she'll say Mama and Baba, which is like just the most ridiculously cute thing I've ever experienced in my life. Like my heart, every time she'll look at me and go like, Baba, ba. Like as I was leaving this morning to come to the office, she's like, Baba, Baba. It's like, it's just, it makes your heart explode. So that was great. It was fun. My mom was in town for a week. My brother came in town. My brother does stand-up comedy. He's done stand-up comedy for many years. So I got to see him perform out in Plano, which was great.
Nice.
It's super fun. Dude, it's crazy. So my brother and I, in almost every single way, I think we're complete opposites. Like every single way you could ever imagine. He's introverted. I'm extroverted. I've always been interested in health and fitness. He's always fucking hated health and fitness. I was in special education. He was always in the advanced classes. Like complete opposite in every single way. And it's crazy because growing up, my brother was always like pretty shy, relatively uncomfortable in social situations. And I've never seen him more comfortable than when he's on stage with a microphone. Yeah. And it's crazy because as soon as he comes off the stage, it's back to normal self. Like not as comfortable. It's like he's more comfortable now than I think he was when he was younger, but you would never talk to him randomly and be like, this guy gets up on stage in front of hundreds and thousands of people and makes jokes. Like you would never, ever imagine that. But when he gets on stage, he's more calm and relaxed and confident than I've ever seen him in my entire life. And it's absolutely wild. Because I've heard people say this about certain maybe artists, musicians, comedians, what I've heard it, but I haven't experienced it until I watched my brother perform. I was like, that's fucking crazy. That it makes no sense, but it's awesome to see him do well.
Yeah, it is super common with performers. And it makes me think like, man, they're really doing what they're supposed to be doing right now.
Yeah,
like, this is exactly them in their happy place, in their cozy place. Mm-hmm. That's so cool. And you know him so well. So seeing that spark in him and that life in him, I'm sure is just really awesome.
Yeah, it was very cool just to see. I've never seen him in a public situation so calm and so relaxed and like just taking command of the crowd. He was in charge. He was the leader. He was the captain. He was the CEO. He was, all eyes were on him and he just crushed it. And he's been doing this for years now. He's open for some big comedians and he does like some huge, huge crowds. So it was very cool to see. It's something that I don't think many people get to experience either as the performer or watching someone you love so much perform like that and really be in their element.
So is he, I guess I just don't know a lot about this world. Like, is he able to do like a special or?
I think he will. I would imagine within the next 3 to 5 years, he'll probably get an opportunity to do like a Netflix special. Yeah. He was doing a lot of stand-up comedy pre-COVID. He was like doing a lot. And then obviously COVID happened and he moved from LA back to Massachusetts and he had stopped doing comedy for a while. My mom was really like, I think you should get back into it. And so probably about a year, year and a half ago, he started getting back into stand up and it's been on the rise. And he's right now, he's been touring a lot. He's been opening for some big comedians, like basically like some big comedians who are doing shows and doing specials. They bring him along and he'll be their opener for between like 15 to 30 minutes. So I think that's how you get the start. That's how now he gets paid to do it, which is crazy because first he was just doing open mics and the lifestyle of someone who's doing open mics is devastating, which I didn't fully realize. But when he was living in LA, open mics would start depending on it, like 5 p.m. or 6, 7, 8 p.m., whatever it is. And he would go from then until like 2 or 3 in the morning. Yeah. And he would go from club to club to club all over LA. And like, all right, I've open mic at this time, open mic this time, open mic this time. And that's all just for free. Like he's taking his time to show up at these open mics until you build up a name and an audience to where, okay, maybe someone will pay you to do like a 10-minute spot, 15-minute spot. And now he's opening for a couple of big names, which is cool. But it's a devastating and very difficult career.
What is it about entertainment? Because it's the same with bands and musicians. It's the same with influencers. Mm-hmm. Like YouTubers, all that. You create all this stuff. You go out, you put in the hours. You don't get paid until way later.
Mm-hmm.
What is it about entertainment that makes it that way versus other industries, do you think?
You know, I think it's a couple things, but realistically, it's not just entertainment from the perspective of everything. Wherever you start, you always start at the bottom. And sometimes the bottom, in a bottom role, we could say like either in maybe a law firm, right? Your law firm, your law student just out of school, like you're getting paid the least. Like you're getting paid, which is different than entertaining, but you're getting paid the least and you work your way up. Or I don't know, if you're working at a fast food chain, like, yeah, you start at the bottom or any type of restaurant or a grocery store or whatever. You always start at the bottom unless there's some type of nepotism involved and you get a crazy start from the beginning. But that's usually not the case. The difference between entertaining, but I really think it's the difference between entrepreneurship versus not entrepreneurship. The difference between working for yourself and working for someone else. That's the difference. Where if you're an entrepreneur, whether it's a comedian, which I would say is a type of entrepreneur, or a personal trainer, or a musician, whatever it is, you're your boss. And oftentimes in order to get the jobs, you have to prove your worth. Mm. And proving your worth comes from working for free at the beginning. Whereas no one is going to apply to work at a job that someone else owns and expect to work for free because the trade-off is essentially freedom, right? When you're an entrepreneur, whether it's comedian, personal trainer, whatever it is, you get to decide, do I want to work here or not? Do I want to spend my time here? Is it worth it? And I would rather work for free at a place that I aspire to get paid than get paid somewhere where I don't want to work. right? And so that's where I think the difference lies in, are you working for someone else or are you working for yourself?
Yeah.
And I think that's really where the difference boils down to.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, it ends up being a real, like a sorting mechanism, because the people that end up successful tend to be the ones that stuck to it,
mm-hmm.
and kept doing it and kept doing it, even when it wasn't paying, even when it wasn't fun necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Metallica was like doing that for like 10 years or something before they mm-hmm. got a break. You know, that's like a tale as old as time, right? The Beatles playing every night in Hamburg at mm-hmm. some club, you know, before they got their break.
Dude, that story's been told 1,000 times over, and probably more than that. Like, with, there are some really amazing comedians, like Lewis Black is an amazing comedian who like didn't, and no one knew who he was until he was like 50. And he was doing that devastating life until he was like 50. And then he got his first special type of thing. I think the guy who played, I might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure the guy who played Gandalf in Lord of the Rings.
Oh, yeah.
Was, I think, like, I might be wrong. I don't think he was really big up until around that role.
Wow.
It was like, it may be a role or two prior to that, but I think it took him his whole career to get to a point where he was actually doing something huge like that. We see this in many, many, many instances. And I think it's easier to look at the people who succeed very young and make it big really early. But then there's also the people that we don't see who never had their break, who never got there. I mean, how many musicians, how many comedians, how many people in the world dedicated 10, 15, 20, 30 years and didn't have much to show for it, right? We don't see those stories because they didn't make it. But it doesn't mean that they didn't make it from the perspective of, like, just because they didn't make it in terms of fame or income doesn't mean they didn't make it in terms of happiness or fulfillment. I mean, I think that working a job that you love, you're so passionate about, I think I would rather wake up every day and not fully like make it from an income or fame perspective, but at least like I'm doing something I love. I'm chasing something. I'm in pursuit of something, mm-hmm. as opposed to going to the same job every day. You know exactly what you're going to do. You don't like it. You don't like the people you're with. I would rather be, I feel like that the chase, the pursuit, the hunt brings you so much purpose. And so even if you don't make it like some other people did in other capacities, at least like you haven't given up. And I think that does have its own level sense of joy and fulfillment.
Yeah. And I couldn't help but think about like a parallel to fitness, which is how many people do you know that got their most fit or really fit at age 35, at age 45, at age 55?
Yeah, it reminds me of my co-coach Susan. She like got her, she really got into like high, insane levels of strength and fitness at like starting at like 55. And now she's 63 and she's jacked and strong as shit and she's doing jiu-jitsu. Like she started jiu-jitsu at 62 years old.
She started like, jiu-jitsu too, man. It's contagious.
She's been doing jiu-jitsu like a year now. She's been doing jiu-jitsu for like a year. She's getting good, man. Like she can put some hurt on people. And dude, she's strong. She at 55, which is why it's so funny. Like it's so great to have her for so many reasons, but especially when people are like, I don't think this would work for a woman. I'm just like, mm-hmm. I just tag Susan. I'm like, you tell him. Go get them. And she's
get
like,
girl.
Go get them. Go. And it's great because she's the prime example. And she's not the only one. She's not an outlier. Like there are many, 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 many. And it's funny because some people will be like, oh, she's taking steroids. And Susan always laughs. She's like, I don't even know where the fuck to buy steroids. Like, I don't know who to ask. I don't know what to take. Like, and if you talk to her for 5 minutes, you know her at any capacity, you know, no, I promise you, she's not taking steroids. So it's yeah. And the other thing that you said, like, you know, how many people really got their most fit, whether it's, you know, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, whatever. Another thing that's also important that I think in terms of maybe like the people who've never made it is I don't know anyone. And I've been in this industry my whole life. I've been in this industry for almost 20 years. I don't know anyone who's gotten to a point where they're like, I've achieved all of my fitness goals. Like I've made it. I don't know a single person who's like, oh yes, I'm the leanest I want to be. I'm the strongest I want to be. I'm the fittest I want to be. I'm the most conditioned I want to be. I've achieved all of my strength goals, all of my endurance goals, all of my flexibility goals, all of my body image goals. No one, yeah, including me. I don't know a single person who has ever gotten to that, no matter how far along they are in their fitness journey, no matter how high level they are. In fact, I made a video about this within the last couple of months. Phil Heath, arguably one of the greatest bodybuilders of all time, his video is up on my Instagram. He made a video that I respected him before. I respect him 1,000 times more after he made this video. He's won the Olympia. Let me Google this. Phil Heath Olympia titles. How many times has he won? Phil Heath is a 7-time Mr. Olympia champion from 2011 to 2017. 7-time Mr. Olympia champion. Like, this guy is the pinnacle of bodybuilding. And he made a video about how he has severe body dysmorphia. Now, we could talk about how I think body dysmorphia is more common in bodybuilders, but that's a separate discussion. The point is, the guy who, when you look at him and he's shredded to fucking bits and more jacked than anyone you could ever imagine, this guy is telling you that he doesn't like the way he looks and he sees something different. So I don't know anybody, yeah, including the pinnacle of what we look at, who has ever been to a point where they're like, yeah, I'm good with where I am at all, which is, it's something to be very much aware of, which I think goes along with what I was saying in terms of, it's the pursuit, it's the chase, it's the hunt to have something that you can go after, which is also why, it's why I stopped powerlifting. I wasn't passionate about it anymore. It was like I had a job that I didn't like anymore. So I was like, fuck this job. I want to find something else. And so I started from scratch. I started over. I started at ground zero. I was bad. And like, fortunately, I found jiu-jitsu and I love jiu-jitsu, and everyone in jiu-jitsu starts as a white belt. And you always suck when you start. And then like, now I'm progressing in there. And then maybe one day there'll be a point where I'm like, you know what? I want to do something else. Maybe it's rock climbing. Maybe it's Muay Thai kickboxing. Maybe it's, I don't know, something. But it's the pursuit of always trying to find something that you can improve, always trying to find something that you can get better at, and understanding that you're never probably going to be satisfied with everything that you have. And that's okay. It's fine. That's part of the fun. That's part of life.
Yeah. And I think it's human nature, right? People looked around and they saw a mountain and they were like, yeah, I want to climb to the top of that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just this impulse in us that, you know, it leads to so much great stuff. But I don't know. I just find it fascinating.
I think a lot of people look at social media and hear people say, oh, I'm just so happy, and look at my body, and they assume that that person is, I have such a unique perspective on the social media landscape, because I hang out with a lot of people who have large audiences, and I, trust me, that is not a flex. That's not me bragging. that is just, it's a fact. And in many cases, I wish I didn't. I've been at many events and many conferences, and hung out with many people who've had large audiences, and I've literally seen them go from hitting post on something that shows them being incredibly happy to putting their phone down and being the most negative, pessimistic, angry, upset, insecure person you could ever imagine. I've seen it go within the span of less than a second. Post, motherfucker, da da da, I hate this, da da. It's like, I've had so many different things. We could look at this from so many perspectives. This is crazy. I don't know if I've told you this story. When the body positivity movement was really starting to come out, I would say probably and it's been coming for a while, but I would say it really started to make a big waves, maybe 2017 era, something like that. Maybe a little bit earlier, 2015, 2016. I saw a large number of people, notably women in the fitness industry, talking about just love yourself as you are, love your body, you don't need to change it, da 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 da. And there were some loud voices in that movement. And part of that movement, much of the movement, I really enjoy. Some of it I don't like, but some of it is great. What I couldn't believe is when I got an email from one of the loudest voices that I had seen at this time in that end of the industry, talking about how she was so insecure in her body and how she wanted to lose weight and she needed my help. And I'm like, on your fucking social media, you are saying the exact opposite. Don't try and lose weight. Love yourself as you are. Da 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 da. And here you are behind closed doors saying you're insecure. You want to lose weight. I need your help. It's like, what the fuck is it's? And I see this in every aspect of, not every aspect. I'm not privy to every aspect, but I see it all the time. I see it constantly. So it's people are looking at what people are posting and assuming that they're seeing the real world, the real life. They're like, well, why don't I feel like that? Why don't I feel happy like that? Why don't I have this? Why don't I have that? Like, it's just, it's craziness, man. It really fucks with people's heads.
So this is we're getting into layers of influencer here, but for the influencer, right? For the person, for the public figure, do you feel there is more of a responsibility to project what they think are positive values? Or do you think that it's more important that they project their exact day-to-day experience?
I think the most important is the truth.
Yeah.
I think that's the most important, which is not always convenient.
Because of the distortion effect?
Yes. Like, the most important is the truth, not what you think people want to see, what you think people should see. The most important thing is the truth. And I'll give you an example. Someone, I was just talking with a guy the other day. I was doing an experiment for this glucose thing where I was like, I'm going to see if red wine spikes my blood sugar, which I knew it wasn't going to, because alcohol actually suppresses it, your liver will prioritize alcohol processing as opposed to releasing glucose. But I was like, you know what? People have been asking me to do wine, so I'll do wine. And every time I share myself drinking alcohol, there's always at least one person who's like, you're promoting bad behavior, da da da. And this one guy, basically, he was very nice. He was very nice. There's nothing wrong with the way he approached me. He was like, I love everything you do. I just hate how you promote drinking alcohol. And I was like, listen, I drink alcohol. And he also said, he's like, and I know you always write in the caption, alcohol isn't good for you. And like, you shouldn't be like, it's not something that, it's just not good for you. But I feel like people will skip over that part and use it as a justification to drink more. And I said, listen, I drink. I'm not going to pretend that I don't drink because I think that would be healthier. I'm going to share the truth. And I'm also going to say, this isn't good for you. And if someone sees that and deliberately ignores it or glosses over it, that's on them. That's not on me. I put out the truth. I said I drink alcohol. I also said alcohol isn't good for you. And he was like, I understand. I still disagree. And I was like, well, listen, can you give me an alternative? How can I tell the truth while also doing my best to make sure that people don't misunderstand what I'm saying? And he's like, I have no idea. And that's what it boils down to, is like, the most important thing you can do is share the truth. And I've struggled with this myself, like, especially earlier in my career. I made shit up all the time in like 2012, 2013, 2014. I pretended to be someone I wasn't. And that's why I had imposter syndrome. That's why I really struggled, because I was trying to be who I thought people wanted me to be, rather than who I really was. And it wasn't until I was really like, you know what? I'm really going to do my absolute best to tell the truth, no matter what. And I still struggle with this. I struggle with this in many instances. I struggle with this with politics. I struggle with this with a variety of different topics. I have delved into it a little bit, but it's hard to talk about politics with family members, never mind random fucking people on social media. So like, it's especially during COVID, it was really difficult sharing thoughts and opinions then, but I tried my best to really explain and give my thoughts on different things going on. Sharing the truth is, I think, the hardest thing you can do. And I think it's the most important thing for you to do. And this isn't just for influencers, right? Like, what makes an influencer? At what point is someone an influencer? Is it at 10,000 followers? Is it at, like, I think we all have influence. And if you're using social media, I think you're an influencer.
Mm-hmm.
And I fucking hate that word, the way the word has been used. But if you're using social media and you're posting and there are people seeing what you post, I don't care if it's 4 people or 4 million people, you're influencing. You are.
Yeah.
And you're projecting what you believe. And you're, so if you're posting, the most important thing you can post is the truth. That's it. And that's plain and simple. It doesn't mean it's going to be easy for people to hear. It doesn't mean everyone's going to like it. It doesn't mean anything other than your responsibility to, I think, society is to post the truth. That's it.
Yeah, that's fantastic. What do we say we pop open the some question Q&As. Box?
Let's do it. Let's do it. I haven't been doing as many Q&As on Instagram as I used to. I've been in a funk with those. I used to do them like almost every day, if not every single day. And I used to spend hours doing them. I have not really been enjoying them as much lately.
Less time with the little one?
Yeah, definitely less time. It's also, it's funny. People would always ask, because I did them for years, ever since the question box came out. And for years, people were like, how do you answer the same questions over and over and over and over again? And I was like, well, if I ever get to a point where I'm tired of answering them, then I won't do it. And I think I've like hit that point on the medium of Instagram. Mm-hmm. I love doing it on podcast still. I love doing it on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
But on the medium of Instagram, I'm just the same fucking questions. And it's just I'm tired of doing it on that medium. So that's why I haven't been doing them as much.
Well, if you are listening, feel free to send me questions as well, and that way I can bring them up here with Jordan.
And when I post the Q&A box, put them in, because we scroll through and we answer them here. I prefer answering them here. You know what? It's the nuance.
Yeah.
It's the nuance. It's really difficult to provide enough nuance, and then people don't read the whole fucking, like, I'll spend 30 minutes on one answer on Instagram easily, like writing it, editing it. And of course, lately I've always been having at least one grammatical error, which makes me lose my shit. But like, I'll spend 30 minutes. Like, I don't give one word answers unless I'm trying to be funny with a ridiculous question. But if it's, I want to give a real answer. And so if I spend 30 minutes on it and then people don't even read it, and they're like, but what about this? I'm like, you didn't fucking read the post. I want to punch myself in the penis.
Yeah, I think long form is the antidote to, you know, the Twitter, TikTok, Instagram pace of the internet right now. It's like we need something to counterbalance the hot takes.
Yes.
And the sound bites.
Okay, here's an interesting one. This is actually important to talk about, especially while I'm doing this blood sugar experiment. Reagan Nicole G asked, how aggressive should a mini cut be? Should it be the lowest calories possible? No, definitely not the lowest calories possible. So what I'm doing right now for this mini cut, and we might have spoken about this previously, but it's a 30-day challenge is what I'm doing. And the whole purpose, this isn't a sustainable weight loss challenge.
Mm-hmm.
This is a, let me show you that you can lose weight. And spiking your blood sugar doesn't prevent you from losing weight. And you have to think about it from a perspective in terms of someone who's creating content. Anyone who disagrees will look for the slightest inconsistency or slightest little thing to say, well, that's not true. Clearly that didn't work. So if I lost 2 to 4 pounds in 30 days, it would be very easy for one of these critics to be like, oh, it could have been water manipulation. Oh, it's not that much. Oh, whatever. If I lose like 5, 6, 7, 8 pounds in these 30 days, it all of a sudden becomes very difficult for them to be like, well, that's just a fluctuation mm-hmm. in weight, mm-hmm. which is why I did a much more extreme calorie deficit during this and why I'm losing weight much more quickly. Mm-hmm. If you look at my previous mini cuts, even my mini cut from last year, because I do one a year, I'll do a little mini cut, I'll lose some weight, and then on the rest, I do it for like 4 to 10 weeks or so. And then I don't count calories after that. And then the rest of the year, I just enjoy and maybe slowly gain 5 to 7 pounds back, and then I do the mini cut again. If you look at the one from last year on my Instagram highlights, it took me about 8 weeks, and I lost about the same amount of weight that I have at this point in 4 weeks. That was way more sustainable, way more enjoyable. I had I could enjoy myself more. I could eat more calories. So when you're doing a mini cut, the goal is not to eat as little as possible. The goal is to eat as much as you possibly can while still losing weight. That's the goal. And that's where most people screw up with their weight loss, is they try to eat as little as possible to lose weight as quickly as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not very sustainable. And by very, I mean, that is not sustainable, period. That's just, it's a terrible strategy. It leads to binge eating. It leads to over food restriction. It leads to negative performance. It leads to a decreased sleep. It leads to often overusing caffeine. It's terrible. It's terrible, terrible, terrible. You want to eat as much as you can while still losing weight. And that's where people will often use my calorie calculator, goal weight by 12, goal weight in pounds by 12. I have a YouTube video on it. If you Google search Jordan's diet calorie calculator, it'll come right up. People are like, why is your calorie calculation so much higher than my Fitness Pal or whatever it is I use or what my coach has given me? It's because my Fitness Pal and often a lot of these coaches, they want you to try and lose weight as quickly as possible, because then you can show them your before and after pictures and they can use you as a success story. Or my Fitness Pal will often realize that users are more likely to use their program if they see rapid weight loss. So they will give you a much lower calorie count. And coaches will do it because they want to use your pictures so that they can then market it and then get more clients. The reality is a slower rate of weight loss is usually better. And there's a middle ground here. It can't be too slow, but it can't be too fast. And goal weight in pounds times 12 is absolutely a sufficient number of calories to help keep you consistent while also being enough to help you lose weight at a considerable enough rate while you can eat enough along the process.
Yeah. Yeah. And you need time to assess whether that calculation's working, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly right.
So you've got this dialed in. You can do a mini cut in 30 days and you've got it pretty figured out. But for someone who's just starting to do one, what's the assessment time they need to know? Like, hey, am I having the right calories? I've been doing this for a week. I've been doing this for 21 days. When do you know it's not just daily fluctuations and when it's actually trending down?
Yeah, so it's a great question. I would say, I'll start by saying this. If this is your first time doing a real mini cut, like you're tracking it, even if your first, second, third time, we'll say within your first three times of doing a legit mini cut, I want you to know right now that you're going to make mistakes. It's not going to go the way you want it. Like, you are not going to get to your goal and then, just like we spoke about earlier, and be like, cool, I'm done, and then never have to worry about it again, ever. That's not going to happen. Even now, like, I do it once a year, and most people who are higher level fitness enthusiasts, they operate within this range. Most people do not just stay at one weight all the time. They will operate through ranges. And when I'm not doing a mini cut, I'm focusing on other performance measures. Whether it's building muscle or improving performance, because I'm eating more and I can fuel that higher level of performance. During my mini cuts, I'm a little bit more focused just on, all right, reducing calories, and I'm going to not focus as much on my performance in the gym. And so most people who are higher level in the fitness world, they know that they go through phases. Sometimes they're cutting, sometimes they're bulking, sometimes they're improving this. So get this idea out of your head that you're going to succeed right away and let's first try. Get it out of your head. It's not going to fucking happen. This is stage one. You're a white belt. You are a white, and we need to do that. We need to figure out how to make fitness belt classes. But that's the first thing I would say. The second thing I would say is, if you use my calculation, goal weight in pounds by 12, and there's always someone, my UK brothers and sisters, Australian, all the people who are like, what the fuck? Like, I don't know how to just convert.
How many stones is that?
Oh man, the stones. I think it's 1 pound is 14. One stone, I think, is 14 pounds. Let me check. Stone to pound conversion. I think 1 pound is 14. Yes, 14 pounds is one stone.
This dude knows his stones, man.
I have a lot of people. I think it's in Scotland. I think that they use stone. I forget. Anyway, you just convert. You can go to Google, convert kilograms to pounds, divide it by 2.2, you're good. Take your goal weight in pounds, multiply it by 12, and there you go. And people are always like, well, what do you mean my goal weight? Think about this. It's the weight that you think you would be your leanest at. That's it. And what do you think you'd be your leanest at? And multiply it by 12. You're like, well, I don't know what I would be my leanest at. Then take a fucking guess. It doesn't have to be perfect. It's not going to be perfect. every calorie calculator you use is going to give you different results. And this is what people are like, oh, well, I don't know which one to use. Pick one. If you don't want to use mine, use someone else's. I think mine is the best. There's a reason why I recommend it, because I think it is universally the best. If you want to use someone else's, go for it. It'll probably work, but maybe it'll be too big of a calorie deficit for you. Maybe it won't be enough of a calorie deficit for you. Generally speaking, I think mine produces the best results from a sustainability perspective. And then people are like, well, should I do like intermediate weights along the way? Like if I'm 400 pounds, should I do like 300 and then 275? I generally recommend if you have a lot to lose, I would start by going to your ultimate goal weight. And then after, like, so let's say you're 400 pounds and you want to get to 200 pounds. Start with 200 because you're going to see a little bit faster results. And generally speaking, if someone's 400 pounds, they might not believe it's going to be possible. So I want them to see some faster results at the beginning. And then once, I would say after about a month, then you would increase it. Then you do more intermediate results. So maybe you start at 400, you pick 200. After a month, you get from 400 to 385. Then maybe you go to like, all right, cool. Then I'm going to go to 300. You increase your calories a little bit and you're still going to be in a deficit because it's goal weight by 12. But you could do intermediate weights. You could do ultimate weights. It's really irrelevant. Choose whichever one you want to try. You could do some days higher calorie, some days lower calorie. You could do some days at your ultimate weight, some days at your at an intermediate weight. It's really irrelevant because as long as you're doing goal weight by 12 or one of those and it's lower than you currently weigh, you're going to be losing weight. So, the other thing I'll say is that to answer your question is how long? At least 4 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
4 weeks before you make a change. And 4 weeks, I don't mean 4 weeks of you're good during Monday through Thursday and then Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you're fucking around and you're not doing it. Like, no. 4 weeks of at least 85% consistency. That's it. And then let's say you get to the end of 4 weeks and you haven't lost any weight and you've been 85% consistent. The answer is not to decrease calories. The answer is increase consistency. Because if you are thinking you're 85% consistent, you're probably closer to 70 or 65% consistent, just watching, like from years of watching behavior and watching how people actually go about this. The answer is not decreasing calories. The answer is increasing consistency, and then you'll start making progress, which is why, shameless plug, we've got the consistency calendar in the Inner Circle, which is just, in my opinion, probably one of the best things that I've come up with. And has led to a massively increased rate of consistency among people who want to lose weight, get stronger, all of that. And it's cool because we can look in the back end of the Inner Circle and see what are the most used features.
Oh, cool.
The workouts, the weight tracker, and the consistency calendar are the three most used by far. The consistency calendar is used by thousands and thousands of people every single day. And some people, they don't use it for necessarily weight loss. They don't necessarily use it for nutrition. Sometimes they'll use it for their business goals. Sometimes they'll use it for their walking goals. Sometimes they'll use it for their nutrition, calories, whatever. You can choose what you want to use it for. But the consistency calendar is one of the most used things in the app.
That's awesome. I was actually wondering about your jiu-jitsu app. Do you have any updates on that?
Yeah. And in the interest of honesty, this is going to blow you away. All right. So we're building a house, right? Not the direction you were expecting me to go in for the jiu-jitsu app, but it all ties together. We're building a house and it is expensive as fuck and it's scary as fuck. So I had a moment the other day where I called my architect and I said, we're reducing the budget by 50%. He was like, are you serious?
Wow.
I was like, bro, I am 100% serious. We're reducing the budget by 50%. And we're like, all the designs were done. The designs were done. We were talking to the builder. All the, like, everything was ready to go. We got the approval, everything. I was like, nope, we're changing everything because I don't want to live in a house that is beautiful and I am scared shitless every day that there's going to be a problem. So like, we're going to redo the whole thing and we're reducing the budget by 50%. And he was like, all right. I was like, this is what I'm paying you for, bro. Like, we're doing it. I was like, this is, I'm not going to pay
with,
for a house.
With the plans, that's all paid for, right? Like you pay for the plans.
So. Exactly. Yeah. So I was like, no, we're reducing the budget by 50%. Now the architect's fee is also based on the total amount the project is. So I don't think he was happy about from that perspective, but it is what it is. So yeah, reduce it by 50%. Now at the same time, I'm talking with my app developer about the jiu-jitsu app. She gives me the cost. Like we mapped out the whole app. And in addition to doing the jiu-jitsu app, we're also doing a huge Inner Circle app update. Like, we're completely going to update it. It's going to be an entirely new user interface. It's going to be very personalized dashboard. It's going to be ridiculous. It's going to be awesome. And we're using a lot of the stuff that the jiu-jitsu app, that we developed for the jiu-jitsu app, we're going to bring it over to the Inner Circle app. It's going to be sick. The jiu-jitsu app was, I think we mentioned it in an earlier podcast, was predicted to be, I think, around $60,000 to $70,000.
Mm-hmm.
It is actually a little over, so now the final cost is over 90,000 pounds, which is about $100,000 or so. So between the house, the jiu-jitsu app, and then the Inner Circle app, which the Inner Circle app will probably be somewhat similar to the jiu-jitsu app, it's an insane amount of money being spent in a very brief period of time.
Yeah.
And so I told the app developer, I was like, listen, my number one priority is the Inner Circle. This is it. Like, the Inner Circle is the number one. Like, the people in my Inner Circle, they're the priority. So I was like, I can't pay for both the jiu-jitsu and the Inner Circle app updates at the same time. So either we work out a different payment plan so we can do them both at the same time, or we're going to put a pin in the jiu-jitsu app for right now and just focus on the Inner Circle. So that's where we are. We're going to have a call when Susan gets here, because Susan comes once every other month now to do the Inner Circle stuff. So me, Susan, and the app developer, Alex, we're all going to sit down and have a conversation, figure this out. But yeah. That's where we are. So I don't know what's going on with the jiu-jitsu app, when it's going to be finished, when it's going to happen. It will happen, but it's just, we have to put a pin in it for the moment, because my number one priority is the Inner Circle. And if we already have all of these amazing new features, this amazing new interface, the Inner Circle, it's going to be more personalized. It's going to be, I'm super excited about it. It doesn't make sense to me to prioritize something that doesn't even have a single person in it over literally the people who've invested in me and who've been in the Inner Circle and who want to join the Inner Circle. Like, I have to prioritize that, number one. Yeah. So put a pin in the jiu-jitsu app for right now, focus on what matters the most, which is the Inner Circle. And hopefully it'll all work out simultaneously. But if I have to just do one at a time, I'm more than happy and excited to start with the Inner Circle.
Yeah, that's, a lot of big changes, and super cool how transparent, you know, you're being about it. Let me put it this way. Plans never survive contact with the enemy.
That's right? Exactly right.
It's,
and this is why I'm glad
things are going to change.
This is why I'm glad we've been so candid about it from the very beginning, because I remember I said, when we first started talking about it, I was like, it might not work. It might like go completely sideways. Like, and here we are, like, yeah, it's definitely not going the way that we expected it to go. But such is life. And you know, I think a lot of, oh, I wish I was an entrepreneur. I wish I was a business owner. It's like, maybe you don't. I don't know. But like, you don't want to get slapped with these like hundreds of thousands of dollar bills for these things. And like, I'm the one fronting all the money. Like, it's just me.
Yeah.
Like, it's just me. And so like, I'm not getting investors. There's no one else who puts money into this. It's like, all right, so we're going to do this. All right, cool. So I need to give all of this money from my bank account over to you. And then also thinking like, all right, I've got to pay taxes. And that's not like, I wish that everyone had to have like at least 3 years of paying taxes and not having it taken out of their check automatically. Because I think if people saw what it was really like to have to write a check either quarterly or annually, just like, all right, I'm just going to give all this money away. Like, you have it in your bank, but when you're writing those checks, you look at your bank account differently. When it's automatically taken out, you never have it. So it's like, it doesn't really affect you in the same way, versus when you have to write that check yourself, you look at your bank account like, okay, so I have this much in here, but I'm really going to have to pay about this much at the end of the year. So I actually only have this much. It's a wild ride.
Yeah. It seems like it's all your money, but it's not all your money. So don't spend it all before you pay your taxes.
Half of it is the government's for no reason.
So when you're, when you're scaling down a house build, what's the first thing to go? Is it the materials? Is it the size? Is it
so
amenities?
It's, the first thing is we look at quality of different types of material. So for example, one thing that I didn't realize, we wanted these sliding glass doors in the living room. And that's fine. I love sliding glass doors. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And my architect is like, yeah, so the ones we were going to use were like, I forget if you said $65,000 or $75,000. And I was like, yikes. Hold on. Are you out of your fucking mind? Like, that's almost a house just for the doors. I was like, I wasn't consulted on that. Like, get me the sliding glass doors that don't cost anywhere near that much. Like, yeah. I don't know how much a glass door costs, but I'm like thinking, I don't know, $3,000 to $7,000 for a sliding glass door should be fine. It was like, he was like, oh yeah, but like the way that it looks out, I was like, I don't give a fuck. It's glass. I can see out. And if I want to go see outside, I'll open the door and walk out. He's like, okay, so we're doing that. We're removing those outrageously overpriced glass doors. So we're looking at the quality of the materials. So, and I'm sure architects and builders are like, no, but those glass doors are really nice. And I get it. I know they're really nice, but I don't want to spend that much money on fucking glass doors. So that's the number one. The other thing, we were going to have a pool, which frankly in Dallas, Texas, like where it's outrageously hot, it would be really nice to have a pool. But from what we've seen, the pool was estimated at like $120,000.
Wow.
And so it's like, yep, we'll phase two that potentially. Mm-hmm. So like we're going to have the space later for it. Yeah. So we'll save the space where it could be, just not include that in the initial build. The big thing for me that I have been the most excited about has been a separate building for my gym. So we're going to have the house, and then next to the house was going to be a separate gym, which this is what I've been the most excited about. It's a lot of money just to have this separate building with the gym. And so basically, I spoke with the architect yesterday. I was like, listen, if we can find a way to fit this in the budget, I would really like that. But I understand if it's not going to be possible. So that's what we're currently trying to figure out. I will tell you the main non-negotiable for us is the basement, which in the Northeast, everybody has basements.
Yeah.
Everybody has basements. So
I'm in a basement right now.
Dude, I love basements. Basements are where all the fun happens when you're a kid. And I don't care if it's a finished basement or not. Sometimes just going to an unfinished basement, like that's a great time when you're a kid.
Yeah.
But in Texas, like no one has basements. And I think it's because the way that the dirt is something to do with the soil. It's a different type of soil. It's going to be very expensive to build a basement, but we want a basement, especially with tornadoes and all that stuff that happens down here. It's like, we're not going to have a house without a basement. So that's like the one non-negotiable that is very pricey. That's like, I don't want to build a house that like, I don't feel safe in. Mm-hmm. So that if we're going to build a house, this is the one non-negotiable for us. So otherwise everything is negotiable, and including my dream home gym. If I have to phase two that, then we'll phase two it.
I mean, that's such a good business lesson too, right? It's just like, there's what you want, which is everything, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's like, what can you realistically do right now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's funny because everyone who's built a house, or even a lot of people who just bought a house, they were like, you're going to spend more money than you think. You're going to spend way more money than your budget.
Mm-hmm.
Then I would always look at them and be like, no, I'm not. I was like, how bad with money do you have to be to just be like, yeah, we'll just keep going over. It's like, it's sort of like saying when the people are like, oh, once you have a kid, you're going to get out of shape. It's like, no, I'm not.
Mm.
I'm going to fucking do whatever I have to do. And so when we had the initial budget and then I reduced it by 50%, people were like, I can't believe you did that. It's like, yeah, because I know what my limit is. And it's like, I would rather be very comfortable in a house that I can pay the mortgage without really worrying than be living in a house that would look cool on social media or whatever it is and not comfortable paying that mortgage and scared every month that it's like that I'm just going to be losing money hand over fist. It's people love to say, you're going to do this. You're not going to be able to work out when you have kids. You're going to spend more money than you want to on your house. It's like, nope, because I get to decide.
Yeah.
It's like, and I'm I told the architect, I told the builder, I was like, just so you know, this is the budget. I am not going over. And I know everyone tells you that. But when I tell you I'm not going over, I mean with every ounce of my soul, I'm not going over. So you make sure that this is exactly this budget or lower. And I think now they're finally understanding it, because like the budget had crept up a little bit. And then I was like, hold on. This order just happened out of nowhere. Fuck it. Nope. 50% reduction immediately. They're like, oh shit. He was serious about that.
You know, sometimes I do audio install work. So like we'll go into a church or we'll go into a venue and we'll spec out a sound system for the venue and lights and all that stuff. And it's not my company. I'm helping someone else, but you know, there, a lot of times there's a divide between what people want and what they want to pay.
Yeah,
exactly. And you're not sure which one's the most important. So sometimes you have to tee up, like, here's the plan for what all the things you say you want. And then here's the plan for what you want to pay for.
Yeah.
And then we can figure out, you know, where you actually live.
Yeah, that's a good, that's very true. Very accurate. I want that extra gym. But I don't want to pay for that. So we got to figure out. It might just be in the garage for now. We'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. Take your kettlebells outside, you know?
Oh, bro. I'm very excited. So what we're doing right now is we're in this building. We've been in this building for over 2 years now, and we've really enjoyed it. But in order to save money, we're actually going to be moving to a house. We're going to rent a house in the meantime. And the house will be closer to where we're building, which will be nice because we'll be able to be closer to the site.
That's good. Which, yeah.
It was one of the best pieces of advice that I've gotten thus far is for building a house is be present at the build so that they see you there and that, you know, bring them coffee, bring them food, like let them know that you're there so that they know that like, you know, that your presence, you're not just like not there. So I was like, I'm really glad someone said that. So we're going to move closer to the build and we're actually going to save an obscene amount of money just by renting this house, which is crazy because we have two apartments in this building, my office and our two bedroom. We're going to be getting more square footage in a way bigger house and paying a significant reduction, a significantly less in overall rent. So that's going to be very helpful as well.
Yeah. What's your home gym plan for the rental? Do you have a room for it? Or are you going to?
The rental is has a three car garage. Mm-hmm. And so that's going to be the gym where we'll put all this stuff. I don't think I'm going to buy all the equipment yet just because I'm spending an obscene amount of money on the Inner Circle app all this stuff. So I think I'll probably join a gym nearby and I'll have the equipment in my gym that we already have if I need to just get a quick workout in. But joining a gym, especially down here, like you could do it for 20, 30, 40 bucks a month, which
I'm
more than happy to pay for in order to have access to everything. So that's the plan.
Yeah. Here in DC, there's very few three car garages and there's very few $20 to $30 gym memberships. I'll tell you that much.
How much do you pay for a gym membership?
So I've got all my stuff here.
Oh, got it. Okay.
So I haven't in a while, but when I had a gym membership, it was like $50 a month.
Okay. That's still
and
not
that was actually a good deal because I that had is a good regional deal. Pass. So oh, I could go okay. into any of the gyms in the city.
Which gym was it?
It was Washington Sports Club.
Oh, yeah. Oh, nice. Nice. I love that. Yeah, we have Boston Sports Club in Boston. And I love that. It's a great chain. New York Sports Club in New York. Yeah.
And that was actually part of like the math that I did when I started buying home gym equipment. Because I had sticker shock. I was like, what? Like a barbell is like $300? Like it adds up. You end up spending, you know, if
thousands,
you want like a complete
thousands and thousands.
Option set, then yeah. It's thousands of dollars. And I was like, all right, let me game this out. If I'm not paying $50 a month for 3 years, I basically break even. And then after that, it's all money saved. Yeah, it's all money saved. And for me, I found I was more consistent being able to just do my workout at home because it removed the obstacle of I've got to get my stuff ready. I've got to go to the gym. Am I going to drive or am I going to, you know, walk or take the train or whatever it is? Then I have to shower. Then, you know, it's like,
yeah,
all of those things that made it easier for me to say, I'll do it tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I wanted to remove those obstacles. And so the home gym really worked for me because it's like, you know, staring at me.
Yeah, it's
there. I had a squat rack in my living room just looking at me, you know, just like...
Is it there, Tony. In your basement? Is it there right now?
So the squat rack is disassembled right now.
Okay.
It's in the storage closet just because of space concerns. But
yeah,
before my knee, what I was doing was pretty much all kettlebell workouts.
Nice.
Which was really working for me in
Dude, I love
a
kettlebells.
Really cool way. Yeah. yeah, it was just, I was able to get a workout in like 20, 30 minutes. I felt like it was just like a really good, like every day I can do this and it's not going to crush me like when I was doing barbell work all the time and stuff.
Yeah,
that's exactly right. It was just working for my life at that time, you know?
I love that. Have you?
But
you
I still got any, a barbell under the couch, just waiting.
ready to deadlift it up. Have you used any steel mace work, like steel mace or clubs?
No. My buddy has some of those. So I've done some stuff with it, but I don't have them myself.
I just got my first club and mace like last week.
Oh yeah,
I'm obsessed. Yeah, I'm obsessed. I love it. I love it already. I'm excited to explore it more.
What weights did you get?
I got I think it was a 6 kilogram mace,
mm-hmm.
which is like a six or eight kilogram, I think, but it's long.
Yeah. It's on a lever. Long. So it's way heavier dude, than you think.
6 kilogram. It's heavy, dude.
Yeah.
And the club, I think the club is like 2 kilograms or something. It's not crazy at all. And it's a small one,
mm-hmm.
but the mace, man. Oh, that's been the rotational aspect mm-hmm. of it. It's just been, I'm a big fan already. Yeah. So yeah, it's very, very fun. I want to get many more of them and explore different training modalities with them.
So being in a basement, you know, the mace wasn't really a practical, it's like I'm gonna swing it into my TV, you know? But I always thought the Onnit stuff.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
The Quad God is like this like wooden long mace with like the sculpture on the top, and I always just thought that would be so badass.
So sick. Yeah. So sick. I love how they did that with their maces. All right, brother, I gotta get to jujitsu, but this has been awesome. Thank you, man.
Thank you.
I'll say thank you to everyone listening. Thank you so much. We appreciate you. Thank you so much, everyone who's been leaving incredibly kind comments and reviews both on Spotify and Apple. Tony, have you seen this Apple reviews recently?
No, I haven't checked them recently. I know
you should go look.
Okay.
You should go look. There's some really amazing ones. So thank you to everyone who's been leaving them. We appreciate it. It helps a lot. So if you have any questions, if you have anything you'd like us to discuss, please shoot Tony a message. Tony will put his Instagram handle in the description. That's it. Have a wonderful week. We'll talk to you soon.